At the end of last semester, Ryerson University announced a gradual return to in-class learning beginning on January 31st. Rising hospitalizations and the death toll have started to plateau in Ontario, according to information from provincial health officials. But there are still challenges that come relating to the effect the COVID-19 pandemic has had on Ryerson. In this first episode of the new season of the On the Record podcast, we examine how Ryerson's vaccination policy is affecting students who are either not vaccinated and those who don't wish to state their status. We'll also hear from a communicable disease expert at Ryerson about the spread of COVID-19 and the future of vaccine mandates at Ryerson. I'm TJ Deer, and this is On the Record. Not every Ryerson student has received COVID-19 vaccines or is willing to tell the school if they have. These students have been told they'll be removed from their classes and potentially lose access to certain school systems and services like RAMS. On the Record's editor-in-chief Nick Parker wrote about four students facing penalties for choosing to either not get vaccinated or disclose their vaccination status. Nick joins me now. Nick, thanks so much for taking the time to talk about this.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for sitting down and chatting with me.
So just to recap, what is Ryerson's official vaccination policy?
The actual official policy is undeclared or unvaccinated students will be de-enrolled from any classes that are deemed in person, regardless if they're online right now. So basically, some online course that we're doing now are considered in person by Ryerson because we're going to go back into person February 28th. So any students who are undeclared, meaning they haven't disclosed their status or unvaccinated, will be removed from those classes. But they are still able to take some electives that are deemed online for the rest of the semester. So it's not a complete de-enrollment, but it really impacts the students because some of the courses that they need are going to be in person.
Some of these people who have chosen not to state their status or get vaccinated may have filed exemptions. Is there a way people can appeal Ryerson's decision if it was denied, or is that word final now?
From what I've seen from most of the students, they've said they're unable to appeal this decision. And what the school sends them, usually they'll say, oh yeah, this is final. This is a final decision from the school and we won't be communicating further about this. So it's a little bit tricky. Again, we're still looking into it. We're still in that process.
How different are other schools' policies regarding vaccination status, exemptions, and appeals process? Is it largely the same or are there differences?
So I've reached out to a bunch of different schools to kind of get their processes on how they handle exemptions and their vaccine policy. At the moment, two of them have got back to me. So the two I know for sure are University of Waterloo and University of Western. For the University of Waterloo, they reached out to me where they do provide accommodations, though they're rare, and exemptions are granted for medical reasons or grounds protected by the Human Rights Code of Ontario. The number of even just people who have applied for these medical exemptions was very small, and the people who actually got them granted was much smaller, and they do not have an appeal system either. When Western University got back to me, they stated that the policy is mostly the same in terms of the exemptions process, where the accommodations are for people with medical reasons, religious or grounds protected by the Human Rights Code of Ontario. Though they did not say how many students received an exemption, nor did they say whether they had an appeals process.
You mentioned that Waterloo said that a small number of people filed exemptions and that an even smaller number of exemptions were granted. Do you have the exact numbers?
No. So I've actually not been able to get, from all the universities I've reached out to, even Ryerson, I have not been able to get a specific number on how many people were granted those exemptions.
On the Record has reached out to Ryerson asking how many students filed vaccine exemption requests. Ryerson did not provide that information, citing confidentiality reasons. A Freedom of Information request was subsequently filed in order to receive that information. It does seem like Ryerson's messaging about the vaccination policy seems inconsistent. First, they say that those who either refuse to disclose their status or say outright they will not be vaccinated will be removed from in-person learning and might lose access to things like RAMS. But from your article, only about 8.3% of those who have not complied with the policy have been removed from their classes. Why do you think they haven't removed everyone yet?
That's a good question. And I was talking to some of the other students as well. They were saying that the removal process is kind of random. A lot of students feel like it's just a matter of time. And honestly, I don't know how long it's going to take to remove everyone. And I don't even know if they're planning to do that. Maybe they're bluffing a little bit.
Other students you interviewed said that the school has not supported them in finding alternate solutions to complete their education, at least for the remainder of the winter semester. For example, other schools have live-streamed classes so that other students can follow along. But then there are some people who have no choice but to be on campus. For example, the third-year dance major you spoke to, who on the record has agreed not to disclose the identity of. What does the outlook for those students who have to be on campus look like?
Well, I can tell you it doesn't look great. She was just able to get through her first semester, just barely, just to be able to get through it. She ended up having to do a dance film and present it to the professors at the end of the semester. They accommodated her for the very, very last part of the semester, but it doesn't look like that's going to be the case again this semester. These students are not going to get vaccinated no matter what. You've sent 30 emails notifying them that they need to update their RAM status and they need to get vaccinated. You've threatened them with removal of classes and they're still not getting vaccinated. These students aren't budging. A lot of them aren't. It's kind of an uncertain time for them. And yeah, the school just not being able to make accommodations like some other schools have, but that's kind of where they stand right now.
Well, clearly this issue isn't going away for those whose programs require them to be on campus. But even when things start to open on January 31st, this won't be the end of the matter, as many people's education and employment status is already at risk. Nick, thanks so much for joining me on the show.
Thanks, TJ. Appreciate you.
That was On the Record's Editor-in-Chief, Nick Parker. In Nick's article on our website, there's a link to Ryerson's PowerPoint presentation for academic advisors regarding vaccine compliance measures for this semester. It says that some people have, quote, begun human rights complaints or legal processes with the university, end quote. On the Record also reached out to Ryerson and the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario to see how many students have launched legal and human rights complaints against Ryerson. Neither Ryerson nor the Human Rights Tribunal of Ontario got back to us prior to deadline, but when they do, we'll update the liner notes. According to Public Health Ontario, hospitalizations in Toronto dropped to 336 during the week of January 16th to 22nd, compared to 427 the week before. With Ryerson students gradually returning to campus starting on January 31st before a full return on February 28th, preventing positive cases and potential hospitalizations is now more important than ever before. Thomas Tenkate of Ryerson's School of Occupational and Public Health is one of eight tenured professors who has signed a letter to Ryerson, raising concerns about the university's return to campus plan for this semester and beyond. The professors who signed the letter want, quote, department-specific latitude to determine safe and pedagogically sound plans of course delivery during the current epidemic wave, particularly based on class size, end quote. The letter also requests a transparent plan regarding 10 different action items to manage potential future waves. We spoke to him before he participated in the letter. Thomas, thank you so much for joining me.
It's my pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
One of the courses you teach at Ryerson is OHS 301, which is called Biological Agents. What's this course all about in a nutshell, and how does it relate to COVID-19 specifically?
So OHS 301 is a course on infectious agents within a workplace setting. And so it's a course about for occupational health and safety students about the various types of what we call biological agents, whether or not they're bacteria or viruses or other various parasites or a whole range of bugs, and how workers can be exposed to those and what sort of control measures we need to put in place to try and protect workers. So it's really about infectious diseases in a workplace setting and how do we keep workers healthy and safe when they're at work based on the sorts of work tasks they do. So it's sort of like Omicron and the, you know, COVID is a sort of infectious disease or virus within the general public. Whereas in the course, the OHS 301 course, we're focused more on what does it mean for the workplace.
Obviously, that's going to be a key issue now because Ryerson recently announced a gradual return to in-person learning, which would begin on January 31st. And the Ford government also announced that a three-step plan to lifting restrictions would take place starting on the same day, January 31st. Do you think it's the right call when it comes to the school's return to campus plan to start in the middle of the semester or to start so soon?
Yeah, I definitely think it's an interesting development and one where it's trying to balance risk? If we think about COVID and it being an infection risk, but what is the broader public health risk, particularly associated with mental health issues and a range of other issues? And so in some ways, what I sense is that they're trying to balance those two broader risks. But if you think about it purely in terms of infection risk, like I would say, I'd like to sort of keep restrictions in place for a little bit longer.
There has been some chatter that Omicron may have peaked already, given that restrictions are being relaxed. Ontario's Chief Medical Officer of Health, Dr. Kieran Moore, said there are signs that Omicron transmission is starting to ease. What's your take on all of that, with the modeling suggesting that this could be the worst of it?
Broadly, I would say that there's good signs that we're in that sort of we've hit the peak and we're coming back down. But I think, you know, what we've seen with the pandemic is that every day there's new information and it's a quickly changing situation. So you know, I think, you know, that's why for a lot of these measures they use what they call a 7-day rolling average, because it's trying to take out some of the peaks and dips in the trends. And so I think if you look at those sort of 7-day rolling averages, that they are showing either a flattening or a downward trend for a lot of these measures or metrics. So from that perspective, that's a good sign. Whether or not we're at a sufficient downward trend at the moment, and will that trend continue? You know, it's hard to say. But you know, personally, I'm hopeful for that.
What are the potential pitfalls of this return to campus plan being initiated mid-semester as opposed to the start of the semester like previous occasions?
Well, definitely there's, you know, issues for students, particularly in regard to logistics and you know, sort of an up, in essence, a disruption to their studies. And, you know, obviously, you know, it would be better if the whole semester was one way or the other. Whereas I think, you know, moving forward, you know, it's one of those things where, like, I can understand why the university is wanting to try and have the in-person learning and because of the ability for students to connect, but to have that face-to-face contact. But I suppose from a public health perspective and specifically infection risk perspective, I'm still a little bit cautious about that. And I would like to think that there are some options for people, for students who are really not very comfortable in coming back to campus, or based on their family situations, if they're living with like extended family or family, you know, their family unit has elderly grandparents or a range of other situations, that, you know, the potential for students to pick up an infection during transit and taking it back to their family is a real possibility, and so I think, you know, from that perspective, I think that there needs to be some thought about are there some potential other options for students as well.
Switching to the status of full vaccination, Doug Ford said the province is not currently considering updating its proof of vaccination requirement to 3 doses. What should the proof of vaccination requirement be?
In some ways, you know, the question would be, does it make much difference now given where we're at in the pandemic? And if we are in this downward trend, you know, some people might argue, well, it doesn't make that much difference. But, you know, my sense is that, you know, I think what we want to do is have people as protected as possible. And we want to really encourage that, because we want to have the least number of people get sick. And so, you know, from a public health perspective, you know, our focus is on prevention. It's not about treatment. And so whatever we can do to prevent people getting sick, you know, we really have to advocate for. And you know, a key aspect of that is having people as vaccinated as possible.
Given that only a third or so of Ontarians have had their booster, and there are other provinces discussing a potential fourth dose for those who are immunocompromised, do you think there's going to be enough time for Ryerson students to get a booster and be able to return to campus should that requirement change?
You know, if you're talking sort of January 31st, it's maybe not, but if you're talking sort of end of February, start of March, where they're talking about, you know, that being the fully back into campus. Like, I think that gives people sufficient time, given when the previous two doses were available.
Obviously, Ryerson is smaller than other schools like the University of Toronto when it comes to total area. Does the size of a campus and the size of the buildings have an effect on potential limitations when it comes to in-person learning in a pandemic?
Well, yeah. So it all gets down to the way the pathogen, or, you know, in this case, the virus spreads. And so, you know, we do know, like, that it is airborne. And so it means that it's going to spread, get into the air and spread over large distances in very small droplets. And so that means that the more you have crowding in indoor spaces, the more potential for infection. And so in a lot of ways, it's not necessarily the sort of the size of the campus. It's really more the size of the indoor spaces and how many people you're wanting to have in those indoor spaces. And are you putting in place protocols to try and, in essence, refresh the air in those spaces sufficiently to try and dilute, you know, whatever the level of virus might be in the air. So there's a number of, you know, sort of factors to that, but it's really about the quality of the indoor air that people are actually going to be breathing once they get into a space. And so that's definitely going to be determined by the number of people that you're trying to have in a room based on the room capacity and the way what sort of air filtrations and air conditioning systems are available.
Dr. Tenkate, thank you so much for your time. I wish you all the best.
Thank you very much.
That was Thomas Tenkate, an associate professor with the School of Occupational and Public Health at Ryerson. As mentioned earlier, Tenkate is one of 8 tenured professors who has signed a letter to Ryerson raising concerns about its return to campus plan for this semester and the future. For more information, check out Aditi Cadell's article about the professor's response. As much as we're excited to be back for another semester, there are still a lot of questions about COVID-19 that need answering. We don't know how many exemptions were filed by students and how many of those were granted. We don't know if and how students can appeal the university's decision. And we don't know how many students have opened human rights and legal disputes with the school. January 31st is fast approaching, and there are still questions about whether Ryerson is doing enough to guarantee the security of the education of those who do not wish to get immunized against COVID-19 or say if they have. For On the Record, I'm TJ Deer, the host and producer of this episode.